Before you go on, let me ask, as assistant foreman, when you were in the shop as assistant foreman rather than on these task force jobs, how many people would you have under you?
Oh, well, I could have, I would have as many as couple, 200, 300.
Mm-hmm. And were you still this entire time the only woman assistant foreman?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But the women came after me.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the first women that came after me that became assistant foreman were in electrical groups.
Mm.
Were women that were doing it. A long time for more women later on. So anyway, then when I came back, and my husband died in 1968, and I was really at loose ends. I didn't know what in the heck, you know. It was very tough because I was the most wonderful marriage, perfect. If I could have just found that guy, many years, oh boy, it was just fantastic, you know. So anyway, he died in 68. Well, then about that time they were developing the DC-10 was coming in, and that's why I took over the development and experimental and with the Iron Bird, and I had out the shop the people that were building up this first of this and first of that for development, you see. And after we got the first of this and first of that, and we got the first ship taken care of as for the development ship, then I went into, they reclassified me then into manufacturing engineering.
I see.
Then I became an engineer. Okay, then I did basically the same kind of work as I did task force-wise, but I was classified to give me more money. You see, they gave me more money, and I was one of the highest paid out there. So I really can't complain about that.
Mm-hmm.
There was one time prior to that when I was setting up the control center for DC-10. There was a young fellow there. He was a little smart-ass, and he was one of those always kissing the boss's ass all the time, you know, washing his car on the weekends and bringing coffee all the time and stuff like that. And it was too bad. It was just kind of smart-ass. He's always needling me all the time, you know. And so one day he says, well, I don't know why the hell you're staying over at night and all this. He said, hell, I make more money than you, and I don't have to do it. And that really teed me off, boy. I got a hold of Don Grant, and I said, I want to know something right now. That little jerk making more money than the other man. Because if he is, forget me more overtime. I'm going to come here in the morning like he does and leave when he does. It really teed me off. It got to me that time. I'd learned many years ago not let those guys get to me. That got to me. If it hadn't been now, the very fact that it was Don Grant, a friend of mine, I could do that, you see. Now, if it was a stranger, I would never have shown that part of me, you see. Don says, Betty, he does not, and he never will make as much money as you're making. I guarantee you that. I said, he said, you are the highest paid, and he said, I'll take you in, and I'll show you the records. I said, okay. He said, all right, come on. Well, I didn't, because, you know, he knew what I meant, but I said, boy, I want to sit, I want to sit. But so that satisfied me. And after that, you know, next time this little guy was on, I said, look, I checked the records, and you're not making as much money as I am. And I said, tell you what, I'd like to see you make as much money as I did. And all you have to do is just get off your dead ass and go to work. Instead of talking so much, you know. Say, do your job, all I ask. And so that was the end of that business. But anyway, I became a manufacturing engineer, and then I'll tell you, I moved out to the flight, moved out to the final line.
With experimental still.
Mm-hmm. Right, uh-huh. With all the ships down the line, moved out to the final line, then moved out to the very last, they erected a new building out there, you know, on Wardlow off of Cherry for the DC-10 because they couldn't hang the tail or anything. They're vertical because the buildings on the other side of the street were too shallow. So anyhow, I went over there, and I went the first ship in the line down all positions, you know, all on one side and all positions on the other side, and I followed the ship out even for redevelopment of the tail cone and everything else until ready for the ramp, and I went out to the ramp. Went to the ramp, we delivered the first two ships. And I was still, you know, manufacturing engineering, and that's when we started laying off all the engineers, and God, some of those guys got not one degree, but 2 degrees after their names, you know, really, very qualified. But being that they were engineering, they got laid off. There was one big layoff, another big layoff, you know, and about that time the line was starting to move, you know. The line was starting to move pretty fast. And then they said, Betty, okay, now the line, you know, we're laying off in manufacturing engineering. And we've got two jobs sitting off of you, assistant foreman back in the shop, or assistant foreman in production control, which I work very closely with. And I got to thinking, well, doggone, I think I want to go back on the clock, you know. I've had all the pressure here and everything else, and I want to go back on the clock. And I want to get back in the union activity again. And I thought, so I told him, I said, well, I decided I want to break back to a lead. My God almighty, I'm telling you, so here it was in the final building, see? And so, by golly, you don't have a choice where to go, you know, in that. You do have a choice, for instance, I'll offer you a job here and here and here in management, but not from the lead, man. You go with a job, And I'll be damned if they didn't put me on that BC-10 to hang in the vertical, which you have to work off the gantry, which is 7 stories high. And that gantry, you know, we hadn't had that gantry too long. And just the week before that I was assigned to that thing, that's where the man fell off and was killed because, you know, the safety wasn't very good up there, and the guy was killed. Made me a little nervous then, too. I wasn't particularly afraid of heights, but I got up there, I found out the crew that I was going to take over, there were only 5 people, 1 woman, 4 men. And the one fellow, the one man, was very anti-female. Oh, and it gave me such a rough time, because here I am coming off the badge, administrative, mm-hmm. you know, and here I'm a woman. They hated, this kid here was like a redneck. He hated women, he hated administrative, he hated anything of authority. So I had a rough time, and it took me, every time I get up there and I try to talk to him about the job, you know, oh, well, learn it the hard way, and stuff like that. I mean, it really rough on me, and the girl wasn't very much help either. She resented me, too. I don't know if because they pretty much ran that job by themselves up there, because people were afraid to go up in the gantry because of the height and everything. Mm-hmm. And when they had somebody come up there, I was trying to learn the job, and you know, when you perform an operation, the lead man, you have to put your stamp on the paper, and that says that operation is okay, and that goes in the file, you know. But before I put my stamp on anything, I want to see that the work's okay. And I put it up for sale, and my stamp, I want to be sure. So you had to walk out in these long arms, you know, and you had to get down your hands and knees and look and check with your feeder gauge to be sure that that big, long vertical, you know, was torqued down tight to the fuselage with your little feeder gauges and everything else. But every time I'd go walk out there, he'd start to walk that thing, you know. And even though I was hooked up in a harness with a lanyard, it wasn't very steady. It wasn't very sturdy, and I was petrified. And all the years I worked for Douglas, at the first time I ever thought I was going to have to go to the company and say, I just can't handle this job. I can't make it. I just can't handle this job. I'd like another assignment. I thought, as sure as I have to do it. But boy, I hung in there. And it took me about 6 weeks before I could go out there on my hands and knees and feel okay that I could get down and check it. But people still hadn't accepted me, but I got the courage. Mm-hmm. And I was determined, you know. And I became a little more sure of myself walking out there, because you only got about this much room to walk on. You know, walk out there. And,
2 feet,
yeah, it was.
Well, Betty, what year was this that you decided to then go back into on the clock?
Golly, what year was that? 70, maybe? I think so. 71, something like that.
Do you think that they assigned you that particular position because almost as punishment for leading management?
No, I really don't. They were having trouble up there,
mm-hmm.
because the people were wanting a job, and they didn't care where they got the job done. You see, in final assembly, the line moves every so many days or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The BC-10 is a big aircraft, so like once a week it moves. If you don't have your work completed in this position, and you have to go on the next position, you know, you have to get your work done there. But now these people here, they have first crack at their work.
Mm-hmm.
But if sometimes, you know, you can go back and work around them. You know, but then the thing is that these people up here on the vertical, what they were doing, they were letting their work ride so they'd get overtime. And half the time they couldn't work because these people were in the way, but they were sitting up there on the gantry doing nothing, but they were getting a lot of money, and they were causing problems all down the line,
mm-hmm.
which was very bad. Very bad,
mm-hmm.
you know. So anyway, they put me over there because it was a trouble area, and I knew it was a trouble area, and they were also redeveloping a tail cone, which I had something to do with in engineering, and they wanted me as a lead on that job, too, so I had both the vertical and the tail cone. The tail cone drops down. Mm-hmm. It's something new. It's designed, and comes up with a patio effect. When you put the tail up, you rip in this top platform, you open up the clamshell doors, and you can rework engine number 2. See? So they had to be redeveloped because they were having trouble with the clamshell doors. They were just locking. And one time we had to take a 2x4 to open the doors up. It was that bad. So they had to get a complete redesign of all the rigging and all of everything up in there. And that's why they wanted me on there, because I had worked with that too down the line to get it out the door to fly. Okay. But Mr. Shea, who was the director of BC-10, he was great to work for. And I don't feel that was a punishment
mm-hmm.
thing at all.
Mm-hmm. Hey, why don't we do this? Why don't we backtrack now? There are a couple of things in that period from, say, 62 or so to 70, when you go back on the line, that I'd like to talk about. And then maybe stop at that point and next time start with when you're back there leading up to the flight.
Up to now.
Yeah. We haven't talked about your meeting your husband
mm-hmm.
and getting, in effect, getting married, even though it wasn't legal
That's
until,
right.
until you put... Mm-hmm. But, and also you're pulling back from the union as you went out of that bargaining unit, what that meant for your life, because for your whole life
yes,
wrapped up with that. So maybe mm-hmm. we could talk about that mm-hmm. a little bit until the point that you resume your union life again, too, and I mm-hmm. when you mm-hmm. go back on the clock.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you tell me first how you met him?
I met him. It was shortly after I divorced Ed Skaring. I had my girlfriend one of the girls that I was close to, that she worked adjacent to me out there at the plant. She lived down at Belmont Shore, and I moved down there after I moved to Belmont Heights over here in Redondo, not too far from here, after I divorced Ed Skaring. Well, she didn't have a ride, so I'd pick her up in the morning, and then I'd take her home at night. Well, on the way home at night, her husband went to the little neighborhood bar right there in the ocean. It was very nice area, you know. It wasn't honky-tonk or anything like that. Anyway, we stopped at a little bar, and her husband would, either she'd be there, or he just depended, whoever got there first would order a drink for us, and I'd stop and have a drink, you know, and then they would go home from there, and I would go home.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I met my husband in there. He was one of the guys that would stop by. A lot of business people stopped mm-hmm. by for a drink on the way home, you know, mm-hmm. and that was it. That's where I met him.
And that was what year? Well, if he died in 68, about 58 then?
Yes.
And so that point in terms of the union, you were back on the bargaining committee, probably.
And he was very supportive.
Uh-huh.
He was very supportive. Just great.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I decided to go into management, you know, he just let me make up my mind, but he supported me there, too, right along, you know. And then when I did go out, of course, see, I was very happy married to that man. I was very happy with him. So he filled every need and desire, and we shared our families and traveled together, and it was just great.
Mm-hmm.
It was just absolutely fantastic. And everything in the world any woman could possibly hope for. You know, we shared so many things.
Well, tell me a little bit about his background.
Well, he was born in Northern California,
mm-hmm.
Eureka, and he had a sad childhood background. His father left his mother with three children,
mm-hmm.
and he was next to the oldest, and his sister younger than he. Anyway, and then when his father left, and his mother committed suicide.
Mm-hmm.
She was working in a factory, and she just couldn't face the world because, you know, he left her, and so his mother committed suicide, and so he and the other two children were put out in foster homes, and he was raised in foster homes. So he didn't have any, what you call, really formal training in high school, but his brother even left school and joined the Coast Guard because he more could help support the kid, you know, the two kids. And so he had no formal training beyond high school, and in fact, he worked as a lifeguard in Santa Monica for a while, and he boxed for almost a year. He was a, you know,
mm-hmm.
and then he got married, and then during the war he worked in the shipyard as a welder.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the war, then he started working for not Kelly, but another car agency,
mm-hmm.
you know. And he worked, and so he worked in conjunction with Ford Motor for over 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
He died, over 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
So then he became involved in the automotive industry.
Mm-hmm.
But strictly as he was a salesman, and he worked his way up, manager, general manager in one of the largest agencies in Los Angeles,
mm-hmm.
you know, see? And apparently, he and his wife drifted apart, and but he was about the old-fashioned school where he, you know, he, no matter what, he's still going to support his family, which is great, you know, and I respected him for it. And we fell in love, and then finally he left her, and we lived together, and he didn't even push for a divorce for quite a while. And then it got to me, it upset me so terribly that because he had a son and daughter by that marriage, and the son had children, little grandchildren, I mean, you know, children which were his grandchildren, and they accepted me just great, and they'd call me grandmother and that sort of thing, but it got to the point where his wife would call up and tell the grandchildren that I was not their grandma, I was nothing but a whore and things like that, and I almost had this breakdown of the whole thing. So finally he pressed for a divorce. So he was paying all the bills. He was paying her $500 a month plus all expenses, whatever it was. So we never knew really how much our bills were going to be each and every month. All the years we were together, for the last year we were together.
Mm.
Imagine that. So finally it really upset me terribly.
Mm-hmm.
Oh boy, you can't imagine those sweet little kids, you know, tell me something like that. I just really, it broke my heart. And So, but she wasn't about to get a divorce because she had a good meal ticket. You know, she had, gee. So anyway, finally the attorney is the one that when I became very ill and I had to seek psychiatric care, it set me such, I was in psychiatric ward in the hospital here, Memorial Hospital, I cracked up over it. So anyway, finally then, the attorneys, we got the attorneys and when they finally told her that, look, there's no more money coming, we're going to put the money in a trust fund. That's going to be there to you agree to avoid to a divorce hearing. Well, as soon as he did that, then she agreed to it.
Mm.
And so we finally got the divorce, and we only married 1 year legally.
Mm.
In fact, 1 year and 3 days when he died.
Mm. Now, was he your age or was he older?
No, he was 7 years, to see, 7 years older than me.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. Uh-huh.
Now,
a very intelligent man, a very personable person.
During the time you were together, what was your social life? Well,
that was very restrained too, because here we were, you know, living together, and we couldn't go out openly in his people, because they knew that he was married to this other gal and everything else. So it was just, we had to live under a cloud all the time, and it was just a real terrible thing of my family. As far as my family was concerned, they thought we were married, and we were accepted by all my family and the union people too. As far as the union people's concerned, you know. They were just great about it.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't, as far as they were concerned, I told my brother, when I get married again, I'm never going to change my name, so I wouldn't change my name or my badge or anything.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, right after we were legally married, you know, he called the plant and always asked for Miss Murphy, so after we were legally married, I come home one day, and he says, Mama, he always called me Mama and Daddy, but, you know, and he said, are you ashamed of my name? I said, oh, no, honey, I think it's a beautiful name. It's hard to spell, but I think it's a beautiful name. I'm very proud of you. Well, he said, I sure don't like to ask him Miss Murphy. You're not Miss Murphy. I said, well, I know that. But the next day, I took my marriage license down. I had it changed immediately. I'm glad I did, you know. But, you know, I'm glad I did because, you know, I guess he felt badly, too, because he couldn't correct his problem all those years, you know. I mean, the idea of getting a divorce, because he's one of the old-fashioned guys, you know, and I respected him for that. I really did, even though it caused me quite a problem psychologically.
Now, how long did you have to take a leave then,
the
first
trip? Yes, I sure did. I was away from work 5 or 6 months.
And were you already in your management position?
Oh, yes, I was in management,
Now, in a sense, it probably made it easier for you to move in to management once you were married, or once you were with him, since leaving the union wouldn't have quite the impact on you in terms of your emotional social life.
I'm sure it did. Although you see, my prior marriage was to management.
Yeah. But again, being able to.
But he was the individual. He was such a fine man, and he wasn't selfish. He was just great. And
well,
he encouraged me. He encouraged me. He thought that would, and he knew how I felt about. He thought it was just great being a woman.
Mm-hmm.
He really did. Being a woman, getting used to this, he thought it was just great.
I guess what I meant was the fact that. Had you not been married to him and having such a good relationship, to make the decision to take the management position?
I would not have. Definitely, Sharon, you're right.
Because since your whole life was basically
in
the union.
Very definitely.
Now, tell me, how did the people in the union feel when you decided to take the management position?
Well, I didn't have, there was always, like I said, there was always that little group that's going to badmouth you no matter what you did, but I had people encourage me, the gals especially encouraged me. They thought it was great that I did that, and they thought it was a good promotion and all that sort of thing, and fine, because they knew that they said, you know, and I wouldn't change, in other words. You see, I would always operate the same way.
But it meant that it took you out of
indirectly. I didn't completely leave it, because even though I was on the badge, they would refer to salary, I would contribute to the political caucuses, financially. And, and I was always interested, I always kept track of everything. And the kids would always come and tell me how things were going and everything else, you know. Oh, yes, and I would contribute, you bet, because, it's pretty expensive to run campaigns, as you well know. So, I didn't lose track completely.
Mm.
Oh, no. In fact, when I decided this was really something for... When the DC-10 line went down, engineering went down, and they gave me the choice, you know, I said, boy, I want to go back on the clock. So on a Friday night, I got my reclassification, and that night I went over to the union hall, and I got my honorary union card immediately. I didn't even wait till Monday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the very next union meeting, the very next month, I went to a union meeting, you know. And, I was so disgusted and discouraged. Oh, my Lord, I thought, this is terrible. Good Lord. You know, I could see that the caucus was losing control and that sort of thing. And I thought, gee, this is really bad news, you know. So, I looked at the caucuses that were in power, and I didn't like any of them. I really didn't. I didn't feel that I wanted to join any of them at that time. Okay?
Including the one that you formerly had been involved with?
Well, because it changed, though, mm-hmm. See?
In what way did it
change? Well, some of the people that they picked up, I didn't feel that I'd want to serve with, okay? Mm-hmm. I didn't share their type of politics, mm-hmm. You know? And I knew I wouldn't get along, though.
When you say their type of politics, you mean, in terms
they
of
compromised.
UAW or
I mean shop politics. Mm-hmm. The people, the groups, from group to group to group personality or something, mm-hmm. That type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't quarrel with the UAW at all. Mm-hmm. No, indeed. Mm-mm. Not that type of thing at all. So it was quite a long time there, you see, that, so then I would support, and I'd work like the devil, go out, you know, and in fact, when Bob Birkhoff ran for president the first time, I didn't know him too well, you know, but he ran when I was in the VC-10, and I come up the Badger. I talked to him and everything else, and I liked the way he talked, and I knew the other fellow that was running, because he used to be in my crew, for God's sakes. I was his lead man, and I knew what a dumb he was, and I sure wasn't about to support him, so I worked hard to try to get Bob Birkhoff elected, and he didn't make it that time. He's presently in office now, you know.
But that was without joining the caucus.
I did not join the caucus, but I supported.
Mm-hmm. So you came back in, maybe before we meet next time, you might be able to find in your records, get some idea of when you went back on the clock.
I can. I've got my reclasses. I can do it.
Came to the union.
I can do that.
So there was a stretch of maybe as long as 6-7 years.
Oh, yes.
When you were in management.
Oh, yes.
And out of the union.
Oh, yes. Technically.
Yeah.
Right.
And now, during that period, what, here you've been involved in PAC, in the union, before that.
We call it CAP now.
Oh, CAP.
Mm-hmm.
Did you continue some of your city and state activities?
When I was administrative, oh yes. I kept my contacts up and I contributed, you know,
mm-hmm.
and did little legwork and that kind of stuff when I could.
So you remained politically active in that sense?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. But there for a while, in DC-10, when we were going through development, I couldn't do much legwork or paperwork or help me outside because I didn't have the hours, just enough hours in the day. But I did help them with contacts in the shop, you know, getting people to go out and work, and I contributed financially,
mm-hmm.
you know.
So it sounds like during this stretch, once you went into management positions and you were married, that your life basically revolved around work and new family life.
That's it. Absolutely. Exactly.
And did you maintain friendships with the union people?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. Sure did. Yeah, one of our presidents, Orval Pierce,
mm-hmm.
and his wife were real good friends, and Ellis and I used to visit them frequently. They'd come see us frequently. And we had other friends, too, very
mm-hmm.
definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Very definitely. But we had mutual respect
mm-hmm.
because I think I proved to them that I wouldn't change once I'm on the clock.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there was only one time that I ever had any problem when I was on the badge that I thought I was about to fire somebody. And would you believe it? It was a woman. She really pushed me to the brink. Well, it was a case of where the line was just building up on development of a new Marine Corps ship. And I was having to work some people overtime at night. But my budget was thus that I could only work, say, 5 or 6 people. So I had to do it on a rotation basis.
Mm.
But I'd have to, the part of the ship that we were working overtime on, I still, according to contract, had to rotate like in a crew. Well, if I was going to work over, say, 5 people, they had to be able to know how to do that job so that, you know, I could accomplish that work for the next day. But this so happened that this gal, she wasn't a real good mechanic anyway. Well, you can always absorb a couple of dum-dums, you know,
mm-hmm.
and flakes. You can always absorb them and put them on jobs. They're a little menial or assist, you know. And so you handle it, okay? And sometimes because they slept off, sometimes they just don't have the ability, okay? But anyway, she wanted that overtime. And so I said, okay, now, you know, we're going to have to be able to do this job up here. Well, she can help me. I said, I can't do that. I can't put anybody up there to work with you. You've got to have this job. And she said, well, I'm entitled to that. And so she called the union in. And so, which, according to contracts, correct.
Mm-hmm.
But here I am protecting her down her anyway. She's not a very good mechanic anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And see, some people don't learn when they're not, when they shouldn't push, because they can get themselves in lots of problems, really. But the very fact that I was a union representative, previous union representative, she thought I was going to bring her up there, and I could, you know, cut off of her up there, too, and I couldn't do that at that time. I could not. So she says, she called the union in, and then she defied me. She said, well, I'm coming in tonight. I said, oh, no, you're not. Well, I am, too. I said, oh, no, you're not. Well, I am. I said, young lady, I said, you just march right down to industrial relations, and I'm going to meet you down there. You know, oh, my God. Oh, God. You know, this is terrible. And of all things, a woman. We're trying to still make our way, you know, out there in that plant. Oh, Lordy. So I calmed down. I went and got a hold of the foreman. I talked to him. I said, I've got a real problem here. I said, I hope you've got an idea. And I said, where it can, you know, resolve it so that we can make everybody happy. So he said, well... He said, we'll make it. We'll create a job that she can do. And I said, well, okay, now you've given me budget hours for this here. You know, this here is what I said. I'll try to get some hours from so-and-so over here, and we'll put her on a dipping machine on overtime. And that's how they resolve it. But she pushed me in a position where I'd have to fire her for insubordination. Isn't that terrible? Oh, I hated that. And that's the thing, you know, see, because to do my job as a supervisor, yeah. I would have to do these things. And she violated the contract, not, I mean, a rule. She broke the rule, not me, you know. That was terrible. As it is, the company did create a job that she could do.
Because otherwise she could have filed a grievance against you, basically.
She could have filed a grievance for rotation of overtime. However, it would have put it to the point where I would have to prove she couldn't perform the job and she could lose her job completely over that.
So you were basically saved from any of that.
Oh, yes. I would have. Lord, I'd have been covered. But I didn't want to do that, don't you know? If it had been, I hate to say this now. I don't think a man would have done that. He wouldn't have pushed that hard. But the fact that I was a woman and my union background, oh, I had a lot of people try to get down to the fact that my previous, my background,